Good morning and welcome to another episode of Kings and Queens, the podcast where we read, watch, play, and discuss history's favorite scream queens and literary kings of horror. I am your host, Nat, and this week we are diving into chapter 22 of Stephen King's Holly. If you have not already, I highly recommend going back to the beginning and reading all the previous chapters with us. Last week we saw our little Barbara Robinson as she finally got to meet her idol, really, Miss Olivia Kingsbury, the old poet, way back from chapter 1. And I can't wait to see where we go this week. As a reminder, when you hear this sound, that means I have stopped reading from the text and am instead discussing thoughts, interpretation, things like that. When the sound replays, that means the mic is back to the author. Without further ado, let's begin chapter 22 of Holly. Chapter 22, July 26th, 2021. Part 1, page 209. Holly is up with the sun. She has a bowl of oatmeal and fruit, then goes to her computer and opens Twitter. She has gotten one reply to her Kraslow query. Elmer Kraslow, Eagles fan, MAGA fan, Nyack Strong, says he's never heard of Ellen Kraslow of Bibb County, Georgia. Holly isn't terribly disappointed. She has 11 more chances. In baseball, it's 3 strikes and you're out. As she's putting on her sneakers in preparation for her morning walk, it's when she does her best thinking, her phone trills. It's Jerome, and he sounds excited. In a voice slightly muffled by the mask he's wearing, he tells her he's in an Uber headed for the airport. He's going to New York. Holly is alarmed. In a plane? That's the usual way one travels 1,000 miles, he says, and laughs. Relax, Holly Berry. I've got my vax card, and I'll be wearing my mask the whole time I'm in the air. In fact, I'm wearing one now, as you can probably tell. Why New York? But of course she knows. Your book? The editor called me last night. He said he could send the contract, or I could come and sign it today, and he'd hand me a check for $100,000. He says that's not the way it's usually done, but he got the green light to make an exception. Is that crazy or what? It's crazy and wonderful, as long as you don't get sick. According to the statistics, New York's actually safer than our town halls. I can't get there for lunch. Too bad. Publisher's lunch is sort of a tradition. But he says we can get together this afternoon for burgers and a beer. My agent will be there. I've never even met her except for Zoom. Also crazy. He said in the old days he would have taken us to Four Seasons, but the best he can manage now is the Blarney Stone, which is good enough for me. He's babbling, but Holly doesn't mind. What she minds is the idea of him traveling on a plane where the air is recirculated and anyone might have COVID, but she can't help being delighted by his over-the-moon happiness. Spur-of-the-moment trip to New York City in the summer of COVID, she thinks. It's good to be young, and today it's good to be Jerome. Enjoy yourself, and whatever you do, don't lose that check. My agent will handle that, he says. Woo, this is so far out. We're almost at the terminal, Holly Berry. Fly well, and when you go to the restaurant, make sure to sit outside. Yes, Mom. One more thing while I've got you. I printed out a map quest of Deerfield Park and the surrounding area. Marked it in red where Bonnie and Pete Steinman were last seen. We don't know about Ellen Kraslow, but we know she worked on campus, so I marked the Union. Barbara can give it to you if you want. I left it on my desk. I know the locations, Holly says with some asperity. She thinks of Uncle Henry saying, I didn't fall off a skitter yesterday. Yeah, but seeing them like that is creepy. You should find out if there are more. We're here. I gotta go. When do you come back? I might stay a couple of days, or I might come back tomorrow. If you're thinking about Broadway, the shows are closed. Gotta bounce, Holly Berry. And boom, he's gone. I hate it when you call me that. But she's smiling, because she really doesn't, and Jerome knows it. Chapter 22, Part 2, page 211. She's on her walk when her phone rings again. Who's your daddy? Pete Huntley inquires. Not you, Pete, but you sound happy. Plus, not sick. I have risen from the ashes of COVID a new man, he says, then spoils it with a coughing fit. Almost. I found your chick, Holly. She stops. You found Ellen Kraslow? Well, not her, but I got her LKA, last known address. Also her picture, which I will send to you ASAP. Called the personnel office at Bell as soon as they opened, so ain't you proud of me? Very proud. What's the address? 11114 MLK Boulevard. That's about as far out of Lowtown as you can get and still be in it. Peter, thank you. No, it's the job, sounding serious now. You think they're related, don't you? Dahl, Kraslow, the kid Jerome was tracking? I think they might be. Not going to talk to Isabel about it, are you? Not yet. Good. You run with it, Hall. I'll do what I can from here. Kinda quarantined, you know. Yes. I can be Mycroft Holmes to your Sherlock. How are you doing with your mom? Getting there, Holly says. She ends the call. 5 seconds later, her phone bings with an incoming text from Pete. She waits until she gets back to her apartment to look at the picture because she wants her iPad with its bigger screen. What he's sent is Ellen Kraslow's Bell College ID card, which is still valid. It doesn't expire until October. The photo shows a black woman with a cap of dark hair. She's neither smiling nor scowling, only looking at the camera with a calmly neutral expression. She's pretty. Holly thinks she looks like she might be in her late 20s or early 30s, which is in line with what Keisha told her. Below her name is Bell College Arts and Sciences Custodial Staff. Where are you, Ellen? Holly murmurs. But what she's thinking now is, who took you? Even if Holly can't admit it to herself yet, she is starting to consider the case as a serial one. The fact that she openly changed the question from where are you to who took you, she knows something's not right. Chapter 22, Part 3, page 212. Half an hour later, she's cruising slowly down Martin Luther King Boulevard. She's left the stores, churches, bars, convenience stores, and restaurants behind. Pete said the address was almost as far out of Lowtown as it was possible to get and still be in it. It's also about as far out of the city as it's possible to get and still be in it. Soon, MLK will become Route 27. Ahead of her, she can see fields where cows are grazing, also a couple of silos. She's starting to think Pete must have given her the wrong address, even though her GPS claims she's going right. But then she comes to Elm Grove Trailer Park. A stake fence surrounds it. The trailers are neat and well kept. They are in various pastel colors, a plot of grass in front of each one. There are many flower beds. An asphalt lane winds among the trailers. Her GPS announces that she has arrived at her destination. At the head of this lane is a cluster of mailboxes with numbers running from 11104 to 11126. Holly drives slowly into the trailer park, stopping when a couple of kids in bathing suits, one white and one black, chase a bouncing beach ball across the lane without so much as a look. She takes her foot off the brake, then tromps it again as a small yellow dog chases after the kids. In front of a sky blue trailer with a picture of Barack Obama taped inside the storm door, a woman wearing a sun hat against the day's increasing heat is watering her flowers from a can. In the middle of the trailer park is a green building with a sign over the door reading office. Next to it is another green building with a sign reading laundry. A woman wearing a head wrap is going in with a plastic basket of clothes. Holly Parks dons her mask and goes into the office. There's a counter with a plaque on it reading Stella Lacey, manager. Behind the counter, a stout lady is playing solitaire on her computer. She glances around at Holly and says, "If you're looking for a vacancy, I'm sorry, we're at full occupancy." "Thank you, but I'm not. My name is Holly Gibney. I'm a private investigator and I'm trying to locate a woman." At the words private investigator, Stella Lacey loses interest in her game and becomes interested in Holly. "Really? Who? What did she do?" "Nothing that I know of. Do you recognize her?" Holly offers her phone. Lacey takes it and holds it close to her face. "Sure, that's Ellen Kraslow." "Kraslow," Holly says. "I wonder if you remember exactly when she left." "Why do you care?" "I'd like to know where she went. She worked at the college. Bell?" "I know Bell," Lacey says, sounding a bit resentful, the subtext being, "I'm not stupid." "I think Ellen was a janitor there." "A custodian, yes. Miss Lacey, I just want to make sure she's okay." Lacey's resentment, if that's what it was, not just Holly's imagination, disappears. "Okay, I hear that. Do you know which trailer was hers?" 11114 is the address I have. "Right, right. One of the ones behind the laundry, by the kiddie pool. Just let me check." The solitaire game goes away. A spreadsheet replaces it. Lacey scrolls, peers, puts on a pair of glasses, and scrolls again. "Here we are. Ellen Kraslow. She was renting by the half year. Paid for July through December of 2018. Then gone." She turns to Holly and whips off her glasses. "I remember now. Phil, my husband, held that trailer vacant through January of 19 because she was a good tenant. No yelling, no arguments, no loud music, no cops showing up at 2 in the morning. That's the kind of tenant we prefer, and the only kind we lease to long term." "I'm sure." We have people who have been here a long time, Miss Ghibli. Why, Mr. and Mrs. Cullen have been here for, I'm going to say, 20 years. We like the older folks, Phil and me. Ellen was only in her 20s, but she said she was the quiet type, so we took a chance. And she was as good as her word. She shakes her head. We lost a month on that unit, just standing empty. I think Phil was smit with her, not that he would have gotten anywhere, even if he'd been 30 instead of 60. I believe she batted for the other side, if you know what I mean. I do. That also agrees with Keisha's impression. She's really missing? Not just from here, I mean? Holly nods. Since around Thanksgiving in 2018. I just had to interject here for a moment. This Lacey character is truly a character. You can tell she wants dirt. She wants piping hot tea. She does not actually care if her tenants are in danger. She wants to know if they committed a crime. Not only that, I don't think it was Holly's imagination, and the reason I think that is because she saw it disappear. And I think that speaks a lot to those of us who struggle with social situations. Right? Like, trying to determine perception versus reality, but that reading that for me was validation that Holly is in fact perceptive, and she was probably correct about Lacey. And someone's just getting around to looking for her now? Why am I surprised? That's how it goes with black folks. The thing is, nobody reported her missing, Holly says. Maybe she's not. She was from Georgia and might have gone home. I'm trying to track down her relatives, but really, I just got started. Well then, you go on with your bad self. And by the way, you don't need that mask. Corona, that's all just a big old hoax. What happened to Ellen's things, do you know? I absolutely love that she's treating this woman like a child. She completely redirected the conversation and didn't acknowledge the absolute batshit crazy statement that just came out of this woman's mouth. And truthfully, there are probably some people that would say, why would you stop trying to spread truth and halt misinformation? But the reality is, it's not Holly's job to make sure somebody else is educated and to stop spreading lies that that other person may in fact believe to be true. Not only that, Holly and most people who took the pandemic seriously are pretty fucking tired of repeating themselves over and over again. I stand by Holly in this. You know what? I don't. Of course the trailers are furnished, but she must have had her own stuff, right? You'd think, Holly agrees. Phil's in Akron this week, at the trailer show, but if she left a bunch of stuff, he would have told me. He always does. We have a good clientele here, Miss Gibby, but every now and then someone does kind of... She raises her hand and makes the first two fingers trot. Sometimes then we find leftover things, which go to the First Baptist or the Goodwill, if they're worth saving, that is. How long was she here? Lacey puts on her glasses and calls up a different spreadsheet. She came in the March of 2016. 2.5 years? Yeah, she must have had stuff. Do you want me to call Phil? Although I'm sure he would have told me. That would be great, Holly says. Are there any neighbors around 11114 who would remember her? Lacey considers. What about Mrs. McGuire in 11110? That's not right next door, but only across the kiddie pool. I think Ellen and Imani McGuire used to be friends. Did their laundry together, you know? Women talk plenty then. And she'll be home. Her husband still works part-time at the city impound, but Imani's retired from some other city job. These days, she just knits and watches TV. That old girl knits up a storm. Sells it, too, at craft fairs and such. She might know where Ellen went. Not if Ellen got snatched in the vicinity of Deerfield Park, Holly thinks. That's miles from here. But she'll talk to Imani McGuire. Holly is a fan of Michael Connelly's detective hero, Harry Bosch, and especially of Bosch's number one maxim. Get off your ass and go knock on doors. I'll talk to Phil and see if he knows what happened to her stuff. I'm pretty sure her trailer was empty, you know, except for the mod cons, when we rented it in February of 19. You could talk to the Joneses, they live there now, but they're both working folks. And why would they know anything? Ellen was long gone when they moved in. She shakes her head. Missing over 2 years. What a shame. You come back, Miss Gibbsy. I'll call Phil right now. Thank you. And ditch the mask. That's my advice. Corona's just make-believe to sell magic pillows on the TV news. This is one of the rare moments that I wish I did, in fact, like, either live record these or video record so you could see the expression on my face. When I read that last line, Corona's make-believe to sell magic pillows on the TV news, I kind of just sat there for a second and was like, what? It doesn't make any sense. And that is so relatable for people who lost loved ones to COVID. Being told it's all a hoax is extremely disenfranchising. Like, it's terrible. And to be clear, people say stupid shit like that and genuinely mean it. Welcome to America. Chapter 22, Part 4, page 215. Imani McGuire is tall and thin, with an afro so white it makes the top of her head look like a dandelion puff. Her trailer is a double wide, painted canary yellow. There's a beautiful rag rug on the floor of the living area, concentric circles of green and cinnamon. The walls, some composition stuff that's supposed to look like wood and really doesn't, are dressed in photographs showing the McGuires at various stages of their lives. The one holding pride of place is a wedding photo. The groom is in navy dress whites. The bride, with an afro that's black instead of white, bears a striking resemblance to Angela Davis. Imani is perfectly willing to talk, but she has a question. Are you vaxxed? I am. Double? Yes, Moderna. Take off your mask, then. I got my second shot in April. Holly takes it off and puts it in her pocket. There are his and hers lazy boy recliners on the rag rug facing a TV whose screen isn't much bigger than the screen of Holly's iPad Pro. Draped over the padded arm of one is a half-finished sweater the same bright yellow as the trailer's exterior. Below it is a basket filled with skeins of the same yellow. Imani picks up her needlework and drapes it over her lap. On the TV, Drew Carey is extolling prizes on The Price is Right. Imani raises the remote and snaps the TV off. I'm sorry to interrupt your day. Oh no, I love some company, Imani says. And besides, they already spun the wheel. That's the best part. After that comes the showcase round, and you tell me why some fat old man on Social Security wants a couple of motorcycles and camping gear. I bet they sell those prizes if they win. I know I would. Her needles are already flying, the sweater growing appreciably before Holly's eyes. That's going to be beautiful. Hell of a thing to be knitting on a day when the temperature's supposed to be in the 90s, but cold weather always comes. Or did. They got the climate so screwed up it's hard to tell what's going to happen from one year to the next. But if the snow flies and the lake freezes, someone will buy this at the church sale. I have more put away, plus scarves and mittens. I get good money for these things, more than Yardley makes, but working at the impound keeps him out of my hair. And me out of his, I suppose. Works both ways. 52 years is a hell of a long walk from the altar, let me tell you, and some of it's stony. Now how can I help you? Holly tells how Keisha got to know Ellen Kraslow and how Ellen just dropped out of sight. There one day, gone the next. I put her name out to the other Kraslows who are on Twitter, but so far I've only heard from one, and he was no help. Nor will any of the others, based on what I know about her. She's gone any place but Traverse, Georgia. She is a sweetie, Miss Gibney. Holly, please. Imani nods. A sweetie, smart as a whip, and strong. She'll find her way. You say she won't go back to her hometown, where I assume she has people. Why is that? There's family, all right, but she is dead to them and they to her. You won't get anything on Facebook. What happened? It does not take a lot of context clues to understand that it seems like either the parents or Ellen Kraslow initiated a no-contact order because she is gay. For what seems like a long time, there's only the click of Imani's needles. She's frowning down at the yellow sweater. Then she looks up. Is your kind of investigator bound by confidentiality, like a lawyer or a priest or a doctor? Holly thinks this isn't a real question, but a test. She has an idea Imani knows, and in any case, it doesn't matter. Honesty really is the best policy. I have some degree of privilege, but not as much as lawyers or priests. Under certain circumstances, I'd have to talk to the police or the district attorney's office about a case, but they aren't involved in this. Holly leans forward. What you say to me stays with me, Miss McGuire. Call me Emmy. All right, Holly smiles. She's got a good one. Jerome tells her she doesn't use it enough. I'm gonna take you at your word, Holly, because I cared for that girl. Certainly felt sorry for her troubles. I just want you to know that I'm no tattletale and no backfence gossip. Noted, Holly says. May I turn on my phone and record this? No, you may not. Click, click, go the needles. I don't think I'd tell you at all if you were a man. I've never told Yard. But women, we know more than they do, don't we? Yes, yes we do. All right then, Ellen. She was always an Ellen, never an Ellie. She was in her family's bad books ever since 12 or 13 when she gave up eating meat or any meat products. Total vegetarian. No, that's not right. Total vegan. Her family was part of one of those hard-shell bunches, the first unreformed church of I Know Better, and then she quit eating flesh and they quoted the Bible at her left and right. The pastor counseled her. Imani puts a satiric emphasis on counseled. I'm a fallen away hard shell myself, and I know you can always find scripture to support what you believe, and they found plenty. In Romans, it says the weak person eats only vegetables. Deuteronomy, the Lord has promised you shall eat meat. Corinthians, eat whatever is sold in the meat market. Huh, they must have loved that one in Wuhan where this damn plague came from. Then, when she was 14, they caught her with another girl. Uh-oh, Holly says. Uh-oh is right. She tried to run away, but they brought her back, her family. Don't suppose you know why? Because she was their cross to bear, Holly says, thinking of times when her own mother said something similar, always prefacing it with a sigh and an, oh, Holly. Anytime Holly starts talking about her mother in an active investigation, I do worry because I don't want her feelings to get in the way of her work, nor do I want them to skew her perception of what's going on in this case. The little slam of the first unreformed church of I Know Better, that was a laugh. Holy crap. As a member of the LGBTQ community myself, I have been told very similar things, whether it be family, friends, strangers, whatever. The forced, I will pray for you, or the forced, I will try to save you. Here's all the reasons why what you're doing is wrong. It never ends. And I really feel for Ellen. People who don't agree with your lifestyles are not your pet project. So, you know. Yes, I do, Holly says, and something in her voice opens the door to the rest of the story, which Imani might not have told her otherwise. When she was 18, she got raped. They wore masks, those stocking things people wear when they go skiing, but she recognized one of them by his stutter. He was from her church, sang in the choir. Ellen said he had a good voice and didn't stutter when he sang. Excuse me. She raises the back of one hand and wipes at her left eye. Then the needles resume their synchronized flight. Watching the sun flash on them is hypnotic. I know a lot of people were too tired to keep arguing COVID. I am not too tired to call out the blatant hypocrisy in the church. Whether this man thought he was doing right by God, which, wrong, or he thought he was gonna, like, make her straight or punish her for her sins, that's not his place to do. That is no Christian's place to do. You are not the judge. You serve the judge. Not only that, what kind of man of God would perform such an act? The hypocrisy within the church is astounding, especially when it comes to gay people and gay advocacy. The plank in thine own eye, sir. You know what they kept talking about? Meat. How they were giving her the meat and she didn't like it. Wasn't it good? Wasn't it something she couldn't get from some girl? She said one of them tried to put his doodad in her mouth, told her to go on and eat the meat, and she told him he'd lose it if he did. So that boy fetched her a wallop upside her head, and for the rest of the business, she was only about a quarter conscious. And guess what came of that? Holly knows this too. She got pregnant. Indeed she did. Went on down to Planned Parenthood and got it taken care of. When her folks found out, I don't know how, she didn't tell them. They told her she wasn't part of the family anymore. She was excommunicated. Her daddy said she was a murderer, no different from Cain in Genesis, and told her go where Cain went, to the east of Eden. But Traverse, Georgia was no Eden to Ellen, furthest thing from it, and she didn't go east. She went north, worked 10 years worth of blue-collar jobs and wound up here, up to the college. So this is one of the few times that I will agree with the literary critics who state that King was angry when he wrote this. I do think he was angry when he wrote this, but I think it's righteous anger. And like I said, as a member of the LGBTQ community, the fact that I could get raped by a good, God-fearing man to try and turn me straight, and if I end up pregnant, I would have to carry that child to term. All of these are consistent current issues, and I don't think King is too angry. I think King is righteously angry. Holly sits silent, looking at the needles. It occurs to her that next to Ellen Kraslow, she hasn't had it so bad. Mike Sturdivant hung jibba-jibba on her, but he never raped her. She didn't tell me that all at once. It came out in pieces. Except that last part, about the rape and the abortion. That came out all at once. She was looking down at the floor the whole time. Her voice cracked once or twice, but she never cried. We were in that laundry room by the office, all by ourselves. When she was done, I put two fingers under her chin and said, "Look up at me, girl." And she did. I said, "God sometimes asks us to pay up front in this life, and you paid a high cost. From now on, you are going to have a good life, a blessed life." That was when she cried. Here, have a Kleenex. I'm not trying to be hateful. I just literally have to point out the consistency in the hypocrisy of the church through Stephen King's voice and his own personal opinions. Just to be clear, God did not provide Ellen with a good life. God sent cannibals to her. Until she takes it and wipes her eyes, Holly hasn't realized she's crying herself. "I hope I was right about that," Imani says. "I hope that wherever she is, she's fine. But I don't know. For her to leave so sudden like she did," she shakes her head. "I just don't know. The woman who came for her things, clothes, her laptop computer, her little TV, her knick-knack ceramic birds and such like, she said Ellen was going back to Georgia, and that didn't sound right to me. Not that going back south means going back home. There's a lot more Georgia than one little shit splat of a town, pardon my French. That woman might have said something about Atlanta." "What woman?" Holly asks. All of her interior lights have flashed on. "I can't remember her name. Dickens, Dixon, something like that. But she seemed all right." Something in Holly's expression troubles her. Why wouldn't she be? "I walked across to check up on her when I saw her going in and out, and she was friendly enough. Said she knew Ellen from the college, and she had her keys. I recognized the lucky rabbit's foot Ellen kept on her key ring." Was this woman driving a van? One with a blue stripe down low on the side? In the spirit of equality and being completely fair and unbiased, the rabbit's foot also failed on its promise because it did not keep the cannibals from getting to Ellen Kraslow. Also, I don't know, stop cutting limbs off of rabbits. That's weird. Holly is sure the answer will be yes, but she's disappointed. No, a little station wagon. I don't know what kind, but Yarwood, working in the impound and all. And he was here. He stood on the stoop when I went over, just to make sure everything was all right. Did I do wrong? No, Holly says, and means it. There was no way Imani could have known, especially when Holly herself isn't entirely sure that something unlucky happened to the already unlucky Ellen Kraslow. When did this woman come? Well, gee, it's been a while, but I think it was after Thanksgiving, but before Christmas. We just had the first real snowfall. I know that, but it probably isn't any help to you. What did she look like? Old, Imani says. Older than me by maybe 10 years, and I just passed 70, and white. Would you recognize her if you saw her again? I might, Imani says. She sounds dubious. Holly gives her one of the Finder's Keeper's cards and asks her to have her husband call if he can remember what kind of car it was. I actually helped her carry out the laptop computer and some of the clothes, Imani says. Poor old lady looked like she was in pain. She said she wasn't, but I know sciatica when I see it. End of chapter 22. Holy crap. So that ending, another really steep cliffhanger, but I do think it supports that Emily Harris went to Ellen Kraslow's, trailer home after she was deceased. Not only that, that name, Imani was calling her Dickens or Dickinson or something. This woman is a literary teacher. She's a professor. How much you want to bet she took on the persona of Emily Dickinson to feed her sick little fantasy? The other thing I wanted to address was there was a lot of exposition-like writing in some of these later chapters. And some people I know get really frustrated and they're like, why all this unnecessary detail? And I just had to explain that I know it feels unnecessary, But he uses that expositional writing hidden throughout the chapter to really set the scene and further learn about his characters. I've said it before and I'll say it again, but Stephen King is very intentional with his levels of detail. Universes that he has created are connected, if anybody knows The Turtle from some of his other novels. It even comes up in It. Everybody knows It. And Easter eggs abound in his writing. So yes, the details seem small and insignificant, but I promise you, they're not. And of course, I have to offer the disclaimer that my opinions are mine and mine alone, and this is my interpretation of the book. It's very possible that I could be wrong, and I really try not to be super political on here, but of course I'm going to stand up for my right to exist as a lesbian. Like, I can't not say it. I deserve to be alive just like everybody else. Thank you so much for joining me, and thank you for your patience. I know this was a little bit longer of a chapter, but there was actually quite a bit to discuss as we learned about Ellen's history. It also super highlights what an amazing detective Holly is. I hope you come back and join me next week. If not, no worries. After all, it is just a bunch of hocus pocus. See you next Sunday, and don't forget to like and subscribe.